But I wanted to do it the next 3 weeks. I thought this would be interesting. At least for me. You'll tell me if it's interesting for you. We talked about different learning styles, and we talked about different rabbis who changed Jewish history. And I thought a lot of that we talked about learning styles. And what I wanted to do was to give us a taste of different styles of Jewish learning and use the Haggadah as the common denominator, right? Because what makes Jewish learning so fascinating is you can have the same book and you can have the same text, and yet different peoples and different schools of thought will come at it from such unique perspectives, or just different styles of learning, that you end up almost turning it into a totally different type of book. So we're going to do 3 weeks where we're going to just do parts of the Haggadah, and we're going to have the different styles of learning, and through that we'll get a feel for it, and along the way we'll end up with some nice understanding of the Seder that we can kind of take with us to Pesach. Sound good?
Wonderful.
Okay. So we're going to start tonight with the Soloveitchik dynasty, as we talked about. We talked about the Soloveitchik dynasty a few weeks back. And I was trying to describe the style of learning of the Soloveitchiks, which is not easy to describe. It's somewhat easier to do, to show you an example, and then you can get a feel for it. So, I mean, maybe you got a feel for it, maybe you didn't. I tried. I don't know how successful I was at imparting it. So we're going to do two pieces by Rav Soloveitchik on the Haggadah. This is called the Siach HaGrid. This is a collection of writings about the Haggadah. There's a collection of his classes that are put into writing by one of his grandsons. Okay, it came out in 1996. It's got a lot of nice examples of the way he approached analyzing the Haggadah. Okay, Rav Soloveitchik, as we talked about, is coming at things from a very analytical perspective. And he was very unique because he did have a deep emotional side, and he had the ability to bring out the drash, to bring out the heart and spirit of the law from within the law. And that's a unique thing to do. Usually when people want to bring out the spirit, they talk about more esoteric or mystical kind of concepts. But when you get to the law, you know, sometimes people kind of have two modes in their mind. You've got the legal side, you've got the artistic side. And it's hard to combine the two. Soloveitchik did a fascinating job of taking Jewish law and then gleaning from it the moral concepts of Judaism. Okay? And we'll see a little bit of that. Or just the spirit of a holiday or spirit of a day, not just from broad concepts, but from very specific details about how we're told to practice those holidays and to bring out kind of a global, more overarching lesson about the entire holiday. So we'll see some examples of that. At the same time, they're briskers, which, you know, as we call them, this line of thinking, this line of learning, the brisker derech, the brisker approach, has no compunction to get into the nitty-gritty of details. There is no detail too small for them to analyze. Okay, and that, for some, can be frustrating, some can be interesting and liberating. But, you have to kind of... The one question you can ever ask when learning this style of learning is, well, who cares? You can't ask that question, right? Everything matters. Everything is fair game to be analyzed. And by analyzing the details, you can get the bigger picture. So that's one thing that I've got to ask you to suspend that part of your brain who says, why bother? Who cares? You have to embrace the approach, and then you can kind of begin to get it. So the first example is Manishtana. Okay? So we're all familiar. Manishtana Laila Zeh Mikol Lailot. How is this night different from all the other nights? Okay? So he starts with a question. Tzarech Ian, Lama Omri Manishtana Laila Zeh Mikol Lailot Shebekol Lailot Anu Ochlim? Halo haya harbe yoter pashut lishol Lama Ochlim Matzah B'Laila Hazeh? So he asks, why do we ask the questions in this way? If the essence of the question for the Manishtana is, there's four separate questions. Number one, why do we eat matzah instead of chametz. Usually we eat chametz and matzah. Why tonight only matzah? The second question is, all of the nights we eat all sorts of vegetables, tonight we only eat maror. The third question is, all of the nights we dip maybe once, tonight we're dipping twice. And the fourth question is, all of the nights we sit regularly and tonight we're reclining. Okay, those are the four questions we're asking. And yet, we keep repeating at the beginning of each question. First we introduce it, and then we say in each line, all of the nights we do this, on Pesach we do that. All of the nights we do this, on Pesach we do that. Right? So why not just say, the question is, hey, why are we eating matzah? That's weird. That should be the question. Why do we need a manish tana? Why do we need to talk about what we normally do? Just bring up, okay, well, you know, why are we doing this different? Why the insistence on the style in the manish tana? Okay, that's his opening question. Okay? So again, it's kind of legalistic in nature. It's really digging into the specifics of how it's written. Now again, some would say, well, who cares? Yeah, that's how it's written. So it takes another, you know, 12 seconds to say. I mean, well, who really cares? But, you know, when you take a text seriously, you really delve into it. Right? You really delve into all the details. And you want to pick it apart. So this is how he answers. So remember we said the briskers, the salvatics, love to analyze the writings of one specific person. Who was that person?
The little kids, no?
What? No. The Soloveitchiks like to analyze the writings of one person, and that was the Rambam, Maimonides, right? So this book is replete with analysis of the Rambam, of Maimonides' approach to Pesach and to the Agada. Now, in Maimonides' book of Jewish law, the Mishnah Torah, he has kind of his own Haggadah. He lays out the order of the Haggadah and what should be done. So that's like just kind of thrown into the laws of Passover or is his Haggadah. So he writes, so Vinei Rambam Kostav. So this is what the Rambam writes in his book about the laws of Pesach. Mitzvah da'aseh shel Torah l'saper b'nisim v'niflaot shina'asi l'avoteini b'mitzrayim b'lel chamisha asar b'nisan. So one of the most important mitzvot that we have on the night of the Seder is to tell the story of Pesach. Okay, how are we told to do that? So there's a positive mitzvah to tell the story of the miracles and the wonders that happened to our forefathers in Egypt on the night of the 15th of Nisan. Okay, that's how he describes what our obligation is. Shenamar, as it says in the Torah, Zachor tayom asher yatzatem mimitzrayim, as it says in the Torah, they should remember this day, the day you left Egypt. Like it says also in the Ten Commandments, Zechor Yom HaShabbat, you should remember Shabbat. So, Maimonides has three statements here. The first statement is, there's a positive mitzvah to tell the miracles of us leaving Egypt on the 15th night of the month of Nisan, because it says in the Torah, to remember this day, the day we left Egypt, just like we're told to remember Shabbat. Okay, what question could you ask on that?
Say it again.
What question could you ask on that statement of the Rambam?
The drawing the analogy between Shabbat and Passover.
Right. So why do we need to bring up Shabbat? It seems irrelevant, right? We have the law about Passover. Pretty well known, pretty obvious. It's kind of the whole point of the Seder. And he brings a pasuk, a verse in the Torah that tells us we have an obligation to remember the mitzvah, to remember that night. So that should be enough. What is why say just like we're told to remember Shabbat? What does that do to anything? Why do we need that? Okay, so again, that's a very brisker kind of question. Yeah.
It's of equal importance.
What?
It's of equal importance.
No one's saying it's more or less equal. Who cares? The point is, he's got laws of Shabbat and he'll deal with it there. Why in the laws of Passover, when he's describing the mitzvah of telling the story on the night of the Seder, why bring Shabbat into the discussion at all?
Because it's just as big a simha. I mean,
so again, it is. So,
well, and
What?
Observance of Shabbat follows Pesach.
That's
consequence of Pesach.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But so what?
He's telling us how to remember it.
Okay, so good. So what? To think like a Soloveitchik, this is what you do. Okay, you see this law, right? And there's three different statements. Let's see if this is working. Okay, the first statement is that this doesn't work. The second statement is, of course... Okay, fine. All right, so statement number one is tell the story on the 15th, okay? Then we have the pasuk, the verse about Pesach, and then it's compared to the verse about Shabbat, okay? And remember, it said, just like we are told to remember Pesach, we are told to remember Shabbat. So from the Soloveitchik mind, what he's going to look at and say, well, wait a second. It's not just telling us, oh, look, they share the same word, it's similar, isn't that cute? Something about Shabbat, about the mitzvah to remember Shabbat, is going to be instructive for us as to how we should fulfill the mitzvah of remembering leaving Egypt the night of the Seder. Okay, that's where his mind's going to go. Okay, when you see a line like this, and again, in the Rambam, which they love to analyze, because it allows a lot of interpretation, that's where he's going to be going. Okay? All right. So, Mivuar b'divrei Rambam, so it's clear from the Rambam, the Alfin Lashon Zachor Shinemar Mitzvot Tzipur Yitzit Mitzrayim Lashon Zachor Shinemar Gabay Mitzvot Kiddush Shel Shabbat. So it's clear from the Rambam that we're connecting these two concepts, okay? And we're learning something about Pesach from Shabbat. Okay? But what?
Why not the other way around?
Because we're talking about Pesach. Right? The mitzvah he mentioned...
Because on Shabbat, we read the Torah. And the Torah tells us about Pesach. No?
Okay. We can make a million connections.
Okay.
No shortage of connections.
Okay.
But you're going to have to hear it once to really get where his mind goes. Okay? So we'll allow that to happen a little bit. Let's play a little bit more. Okay. So what's the first thing he's going to do then? So let's say you want to do this. Okay? Let's say you're going to analyze... we have this mitzvah to tell the story, and the source of that mitzvah is this pasuk, and then it says, just like the mitzvah to remember Shabbat. So what's the first step to analyze this?
What's the story?
What's
the story, if you're going from story to Pesach?
So he goes the opposite way.
Okay.
He says, well, what is the mitzvah to remember Shabbat? Right? In order to connect it back to Pesach, we have to know what this is. So what is this mitzvah to remember Shabbat about? Okay, so where is he going to look for it? Where is he going to look for an answer?
The Torah.
No, the Rambam. When in doubt, go to the Rambam. What?
Rambam is the source, not the Torah.
Well, it's because it's the Rambam making this connection. Okay? So the Rambam makes this connection. So he'll say, well, let's see how the Rambam understood this mitzvah. And then we can maybe glean something from that and see how it applies to Pesach.
But Rambam never gave any explanations. He just stated the facts.
Ah, so, here's a trick. There's always a trick, okay? The Rambam wrote many different books. So in his book of Jewish law, he doesn't really give explanations. But he has a second book where he lays out the 613 mitzvot. Right? And we talked about this a little bit, that certainly in the Middle Ages, a lot of the leading rabbis were making lists of the 613 mitzvot, because the Talmud says there are 613 mitzvot, but doesn't say doesn't enumerate them. So they enjoy trying to figure out how do you get the 613? So the Rambam has his list of 613, and in that list he'll explain the mitzvah a little bit more. So if you go to that book, you might be able to get a little bit, glean something more out of it.
About Shabbat.
What?
About Shabbat.
Shabbat, exactly.
Does that give references?
A little bit more, yeah, okay. More so, yeah. So, v'hinei begeder mitzvah kiddush shel Shabbat. So, when it comes to the mitzvah of saying kiddush on Shabbos, this is what the Rambam writes in his book about the 613 mitzvah, and he quotes: "Hishet zivanu Lekadesh et Shabbat, v'leimor devarim b'knisato v'yitziato. So the commandment, the mitzvah, is to sanctify Shabbat, right? And to do it with words, which we do at the beginning and at the end. When Shabbat enters, we say Kiddush, right? Which is welcoming Shabbos with words. And as Shabbos leaves, that's Havdalah, right? So actually, so he compares, and that's why a lot of people think that Havdalah might be a Torah law, because it's connected to Kiddush. Naskir bam yitziat Mitzrayim, v'kiddush hayom. Okay, and in Kiddush, we remember leaving Egypt, and we remember the day of Shabbos, right? Right, we say Zechel Litzei Mitzrayim. So we remember leaving Egypt in Kiddush. Umalato v'havdalo mishar hayamim hakodmim menu ve'abayim acharav akan l'shono. Sorry. And then we remember the day, we sanctify the day of Shabbos, we lift it up, and we separate it from the other days before it, and the ones that come afterwards, right? Is there a door here or something? Grab one from the room. We'll just go through Kiddush real quick, just so we can see exactly what he's saying. So when we say Kiddush Friday night, what is it that we are saying? Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us with His commandments, took pleasure in us, and with love and favor gave us His holy Shabbos as a heritage, a remembrance of creation. For that day is the prologue to the holy convocations, a memorial to the exodus from Egypt. For us did you choose, and did you sanctify us from all the nations, and your holy Shabbat, with love and favor, did you give us as a heritage. Blessed are you, sanctifies the Shabbos. Okay. And the first paragraph, which I skipped earlier, that thus the heavens and earth were finished in all of their array. On the seventh day, God completed His work which He had done, and He abstained on the seventh day from all His work which He had done. God blessed the seventh day and hallowed, because on it He abstained from all the work which God created to make. Okay, so we have this concept of separation, right? Which again, in Havdalah, we do again as well, right? That we separate Shabbat from the other days, we separate us from the other nations, and we remember leaving Egypt. So, it says that these are the elements of Kiddush, the elements of the Kiddush for Shabbos. To remember Shabbos means you remember the holiness of the day. So remember the holiness of the day. You remember leaving Egypt. And you remember how this day is different than other days.
And there's a direct connection to Pesach.
Where?
Leaving Egypt. And right. Remember.
Okay. We'll see it goes deeper than that. So we see from this the mitzvah kiddush he lo rak amirat hadvarim benogeli kiddush hatayom. So saying kiddush is not just about mentioning that today is holy, right? Kiddush can just be, you know, baruch atah Hashem mekadesh haShabbat, blessed are you Hashem who sanctifies the Shabbos. Done. Why do we mention all these things in our kiddush? El nichlal b'mitzvah kiddush shetzarach lomar shiyom haShabbat. It's not enough to just say that Shabbos is unique on its own. Part of remembering Shabbos is by distinguishing it from the other days. You have to explicitly distinguish it. So, even the language, the word kiddush, what does that word mean? To sanctify something. To sanctify means to separate it and to make it distinct. Right? Sanctification means separation. Right? And when a couple gets married, the term for marriage is kiddushin. Same means it's one way to sanctify the relationship. It also means to distinguish, to separate. You can now not be with anyone else. You are now, you two are separated for each other to a certain extent. So part of holiness means separation, distinction. Vimkeinir degam asibuyis yit mitzrayim dekavata dealfim ashekat debo zachor kamo bekiddush. So too when it comes to the mitzvah of telling the story of the Exodus, which we also learn from this concept of zachor like kiddush. So the mitzvah is according to the Rambam. Lo rak l'saper she'etzayim. So it's not enough on Pesach, the night of the Seder, to just say, "Oh, by the way, God took us out of Egypt," past the wine. Right? That's not enough. That the point of the Seder is not just to say we left Egypt. El degam kein tzrichim lomar shalel tedvav v'nisan hu laila shemuvdal muforsh mishar le'etlashena. Just like we have to say on Shabbos that today is different than the other days, so to part of remembering the Exodus is to say that tonight, the night of Pesach, is different than all other nights. Got it? So what are we getting back to with that?
The four questions.
To the four questions, right? Since we left Pesach on this night is different. Why is this night different? Because of what happened on it. But this night is different, it is distinct, it is holy. So how exactly do we go about that? So how do we go about distinguishing this night during the Seder? V'nira lomar, t'inei kavar b'yar, n'udaram, sover dekori ha'gadda, huzesh omer ma'anish shana, shibkola. So there are some perspectives that say that the ma'anish shana is not said by the child. The ma'anish shana is said by the person who leads the Seder, right? Because if you look at the ma'anish shana, it's not actually a question, right? What is the first line is what? Manish tana la'azim mikol ha'leilot. How is this night different from all other nights? So there's two ways of reading it. It could be an opening question. How is this night different? Or it could be, how is this night different from all other nights? I'll tell you how it's different, right? It's like a rhetorical question. You're setting up your statement. Well, how is it different? I'll tell you how it's different. All other nights. It's almost like there was a question of how is tonight different, and then this is almost the answer. That's another way of looking at the Ma'anish Tana. Okay? So he says, according to that perspective, so according to the Rambam, it's the leader who says it. Yeah.
Then why do we say the fourth question? I mean, if you say it as a statement, it's still a question, because after that comes four questions.
No, so those questions aren't questions. Meaning, when it says, on all other nights, we eat chametz and matzah, tonight we just eat matzah. So that could be a question, right? That could be an extension of the original question. Mm-hmm. How is tonight different? For example, yeah. On all other nights, we eat anything. But tonight, right, we only eat matzah.
Yes.
But the language is not really the language of a question. It's really a statement. It says, on all other nights, we eat chametz and matzah. Tonight we eat matzah. That's not like a question. It's really a statement, right? It should be lama balayla zeh kula matzah. Why is it that tonight we only eat matzah? That's the language of a question. Why? What? How?
Yes.
But there's none of that. It's really laid out as a statement. Okay. So the way the Rambam understood the Ma'anish Tana is it's a statement made by the leader of the Seder. It's coming from a general question from the kids of something seems weird, what's going on tonight, and then this is the setup, this is laying out how it's different, and then explaining why it's different. That's Avodim Ha'inim B'Par Mitzrayim, we're slaves to power in Egypt. So that's the Rambam's perspective. This is not, I'm not saying kids should sing the Ma'anish Tana. Go ahead, kids should sing. I'm not saying.
There's a lot of kids who like your explanation.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm some sort of anti-Ma'anish Tana platform here. That's not my point.
Okay. Good.
My kids will be singing with everybody else.
Okay.
But that doesn't change the fact that according to the Rambam writes, that this is meant for something. What? What does he know? Right. Did his son? Did his son get up and sing the question? Hey, no. I don't know. These are questions we don't have answers to. Deram sover dekori agada hu zesh omer manish tana shivakol elot veilu haben eno shoa manish tana shivakol elot el shoa al dvarim shemadmi moto. Right. That the idea, the children's job of the Seder is to ask questions, but not to ask preordained questions that are fed to them, but to ask real questions, things that they don't get. And so the point of the Seder is to encourage questions from the kids, to get them in the mindset of asking questions. And, you know, once you get kids asking questions, they're pretty good at going with that, right? They've got a million questions. They're kids. That's kind of what they do. Why this? You know, why that? So, so his point is that we don't want to feed the kids questions because they're not really asking questions. That's kind of the question. And the question everyone asks about the four questions is, how are these really questions? You know, it's they're prepped, right? So, umasha gama kore omer manashina hanu mishim degam sibushi mitzrayim atzma tzricha le'amar b'derech she'ela u'tshuva. Yotze l'fi zeh de she'ela manashina hu chelak. So he explains that the four questions, quote unquote, the Ma'anish Tana, is a part of the mitzvah to tell the story of Pesach. Right? We think that we ask these questions and then we tell the story. And he says no. The storytelling starts from Ma'anish Tana, not from Avadim Hayinu that we were slaves in Egypt.
Is this Rambam or?
This is his understanding of the Rambam.
Okay.
Yeah. Achadayin sarach ian, lama sholi manish tenah lay lezim kol elot, shkol elot anu ochlim, v'ena shol rak, lama ochlim b'lay lezim matzat, v'she'e lezo mitkayim adin, t'zibur t'yib mitzrayim, sarach le'amer b'derach she'e l'tshuva. So he says that the reason that we have them structured this way, as we said earlier, as we alluded to earlier, is that in order to do the mitzvah of telling the story of Pesach, if we're going to model after Shabbos, we have to distinguish it. And the way we distinguish it is by pointing out what we normally do versus what we do now. Okay? So that's why the Ma'anish Tana is written this way, and that's why this is a part of the mitzvah to remember and tell a story of the Exodus. Elonir dehainu taima de bezeh shemusaf mikode manish tana halayla zim kolot rechak mevaer shekolot ochlim chametz matzah halayla zeh kolot matzah anu omri mezeh shalayla zeh muvdal mufarash mishar alot hashana adezesh anu ochlim matzah mekayimim etshar mitzvah. So what we're trying to point out is that the definition of sanctification is to be separate and distinct, and so we're pointing out that this night is separate and distinct. That not only do we eat things we don't normally eat, not only do we not eat chametz, we only eat matzah, but everything about this night is funny, it's different.
So the kiddush isn't enough to separate.
Right, so the kiddush is not enough. That the kiddush that we say is like the kiddush on Shabbos, but we need an added element of distinction, of separation. So we do that in a number of different ways. How do we do that? Manish Tana Halayla Hazeh, this is how it's different. We do this, we do that. Yeah.
We don't refer to Pesach as holy.
Why not?
We do?
Sure.
Typically it's...
Well, all holidays are holy, but yeah.
No, but per se, there's a language which defines it and calls it holy. In Shabbos, there is a specific language which calls it holy.
Mm-hmm. No, I hear you saying.
I mean, we understand that all holidays are holy, but I'm not aware of the specific language.
So what he's saying, okay, this is the jump he's making. This is the flow of the logic, is that okay, we connect to the first statement is Shabbos, okay? So Shabbos we were told to remember. Okay, so how do we remember Shabbos? We remember...
By observing it.
Well, so... According to the Talmud, the term Zachor, to remember Shabbos, means to say Kiddush. It doesn't only mean that, but that's the main way that we do it. How do we, and then we also observe Shabbos, because remember in the two versions of the Ten Commandments in the Torah, it describes the mitzvah of keeping Shabbos differently. One time it says remember Shabbos, the other time it says to observe Shabbos. So observe Shabbos means don't work and don't do the malacha. Remember Shabbos means to actively do things on Shabbos to make it separate and distinct. The most fundamental way that we do that is by saying Kiddush, which is on the most basic level remembering Shabbos. We get up and we say, hey, it's Shabbos. Right? Most basic way you can do it. So what he's doing is, number one, he's saying this term Zachor, remember, on Shabbos, what does it mean? It means Kiddush. What do we have in Kiddush? In Kiddush, according to the Rambam, the three main elements are holiness, you know, leaving Egypt, and distinction. Okay? Those are your three elements. Okay? Now we're saying, when it comes to Pesach, we have the same word, to remember. Okay? As we said, we have, as we quoted at the start of this piece, Zachor et hayom asher yatzatim min Mitzrayim. Remember the day that you left Egypt. So we have a mitzvah to remember this day, right? Which is the 15th of Nisan. So we're supposed to remember this day. How do we remember this day? So he said, according to the Rambam, what you're doing is you're remembering on this day just like you remember this day. So he wants to then apply these three elements, saying this is the definition of remembering a day.
Except okay. That Pesach came first, and Shabbat came later.
What do you mean? Shabbat's the seventh day of creation. The Torah mentions Shabbat all the way back then. If anything, Shabbat is first.
But we're not given Shabbat until after Pesach.
Yeah, okay. We're not told not to remember it until we get... No one said to remember it until we get to...
No, that's fair, but that doesn't matter. I mean, it's the Torah is given as a unit. So it's collective in that sense. You know, even though, yes, things... Yeah, we left Egypt before we got the Torah, but until we get the Torah, we don't have the mitzvah. So that's his logic. So basically what he's saying is that this is the definition of remember is Kiddush, and this is what, according to the Rambam, makes up Kiddush. So therefore we'll apply it back here, and now we're going to find how at the Seder, we need these three elements in order to fulfill the mitzvah to remember the day we left Egypt.
Well, you definitely have those three elements in Pesach.
And that's the point. Absolutely. So the point is, the idea of distinction, right? It's not enough to just say, tonight is holy. We also say, tonight is holy, and it's different than other nights because of this.
Sure.
So saying, the Manish Tanah is written the way it's written, in order to fulfill this aspect of remembrance. Got it? That's what he's saying. I mean, the opening question was why do we admonish that I've written this way? Just say, hey, why do we matzah tonight? Why do we recline tonight? That could be the question. Why say all other nights we do this, tonight we do this? All other nights we don't recline, tonight we do. Why make that? Why set it up and knock it down?
Why do you need it in the first place if it just says tell the story? If it's just telling the story, you don't necessarily need four questions.
That's right. Another good point. Right. Just start with the story. Right. So the idea is that part of the remembrance is the distinction. We want to make that clear. That's the idea. That's what he says. Okay? I'm starting to get the way he thinks a little bit.
But, yeah. I mean, that applies to any holiday. The holidays...
Yes, any holiday where we're told to remember,
right.
According to Rambam, you would think you could apply the same logic.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not told to remember every holiday. We're not told to remember Shavuot or Sukkot or anything. You know, it's rare that we're told to remember, quote unquote. But we're told to remember.
Shavuot is not based on an event. Shavuot is commanded in the Torah. But other holidays are based on a specific event.
Rosh Hashanah is not. Yom Kippur is not.
Hanukkah.
Yeah, but that's much later. You can't apply it. It's not in the Torah. What?
Are we commanded to remember Rosh Hashanah?
There is somewhat of a concept of remembrance in Rosh Hashanah, but not Yom Kippur.
We're commanded to remember those holidays which are based on a historical event.
Well, Rosh Hashanah is called a Zichron Trua, remembrance of Trua. So there's a concept of remembrance, but then we'd have to delve into Rosh Hashanah.
Well, make sure you remember, you don't forget the holiday.
Remember all the holidays. But, meaning the idea, what he's trying to say is this when the Torah says remember these days, it doesn't just mean, you know, make sure you put an alarm on your phone or, you know, a reminder on your phone.
Remembering Pesach has a very, very high level. It's you remember it for generations. You remember it as though it happened today. The remembrance is an extremely high component.
Yeah, I understand. What he's saying is that remembrance doesn't just mean make sure it exists in your mind.
Make sure you don't forget.
There's
more to it.
So he's saying, there is more to it. What he's saying is that remembrance means you do these three things. That's how you remember.
Sure.
That's the point. So we have to make sure that we incorporate that into Haggadah to make sure that Jews, for all times, will fulfill all three aspects of that to fully remember the day. So by incorporating the Manesh Tana, we're making the distinction we need in order to fulfill that. That's the point.
There is a remembrance in Purim. There's a component of...
Purim and Chanukah are different because they're post-biblical, so...
Oh, I see.
Esther's is in the Bible, but they're post five books of Moses, so you can't really apply this as easily. Yeah. And Chanukah is post-biblical altogether, so...
references to Hanukkah in the Torah.
Yeah, the Ramban has some things. Yeah, but let's get back to this. That's a whole other. Hanukkah was December, so next year Hanukkah we can do this.
It was prophesied.
No,
it was prophesied.
I know, and I know you, what you're referencing that perspective. Okay. So the point of the Manesh Tana is not just to ask questions, but to make sure we make the distinction of how tonight is different. Because this night has these mitzvot, so it's different. And this we will fulfill the law according to the Rambam, that it says that we learn out remembering Pesach from Shabbos, from the idea of Kiddush on Shabbos. Okay, one little more point he adds. The Odin here, it also seems, Del Shita to Rambam, according to the Rambam, that the son doesn't, the children don't get up and read Manesh Tana. Rather, they ask whatever's on their mind, whatever seems weird to them. Right? You always ask your kids, you know, what seems weird about tonight? And there's a lot of customs throughout the generations of doing weird things intentionally on Pesach just to get the kids to ask questions, because it gets dry. Predictable. So you have to make the Seder different every year to make, you know, the kids ask questions what's going on, right? When I was younger and had more time, I used to do a lot of different things. One year for a Seder, I wasn't in college already. Yeah, I think I was in college. I did like riddles. Everyone got a riddle at their table, at their seat. And they had to figure out the riddle and compare it and figure out how it connects to, like what part of the Seder is referring to. But it was like, you know, and then that was like, kept people, you know, guessing and talking about it. I had a lot more time on my hands back then.
I like this
guy. I was in college.
I like this guy.
It was fun. No, it was a lot of fun, you know.
Because everybody gets active in that.
Exactly. That's the point. Everybody gets more active. Yeah. There's always a few people who are like, oh, that's stupid, I'm not going to do it. But just ignore them. And then you spike their wine.
With four cups, is it necessary?
You know,
you can get
Double shot, what?
We can get very happy with that. I remember when I was a kid, all I remember is the holiday, I got drunk like a skunk.
You remember the third cup and not the fourth one?
The problem. It's all on that one.
All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anatam Shoshua La Kore. Mishim to be in and see what you've been trying, yeah, but Derek Shayla Chuva, Kamashwar and Leo. Of Amit Ainman Shana Shayla Lama Nish Tana Laila Zemishale Lotashana Klau. Of the pair shall shall mash and shall be mash and shall, oh, I day mash and manish and Laila Zem called in of Ainish Shayla. Okay, snatch your pain. That's, we made that fun already. Okay. Should we do a little bit more? A little more?
Sure.
Yeah? Okay. So I'll do another piece. This is a short piece. We'll do this one.
By the way, it was important. I remember when I was a kid that even if you didn't go to shul, even if you didn't do anything all year long, but on Passover, you had to have a piece of matzah. And that was a simha. And
I think they're still that way.
And some of kids connect themselves to Judaism.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I agree. Okay. Karpas. So karpas is a very funny part of the Seder. That's the vegetable that we eat after Kiddush, right? Before anything else. So some people have celery, some people have potatoes, different people have different things. So why do we have karpas? So the Rambam says, again, continuing with our trend, HaRambam kasta behilchos chametz u'matzah. So when the Rambam talks about the concept of karpas, this is what he says. V'lokeach yerek, you should take the vegetable, u'metabel to becharoset, and you should dip it in charoset, v'ochel kazay, and you should eat an olive's worth, and that's not literally, but olives, that's a, in Jewish law, considering, you know, to eat something is considered eating an olive's worth. It's a measurement. It's a measurement. It's like the basic amount of food which would require an after blessing. So you should eat that amount. Hu v'kolam esubin imo, and everyone at the table as well. Kol echa v'echad ein ochel pachu mikazayit. So no one should eat less than a kazayit. Okay, all right. But the language of the Rambam needs understanding. So the Gemara says, why do we have this karpas? Because it's, on the most basic level, it's strange. It's a strange thing to do. Typically, what do we do after we make Kiddush? Right? During, you know, we have a Shabbat Yom Tov meal. We make Kiddush. What's the next thing we do?
Hamotzi.
Right? We wash our hands and make hamotzi. Here we wash our hands and eat vegetables. So it's strange. Right? And typically that's not the way we eat.
Well, it's different.
Right. That's right. That's the point. Right. That's the point. The point is to do things that are different right from the beginning. So karpas is there because it's different. V'kein ma de ogren de shochan. Also, it mentions that we're supposed to remove the Seder plate for no reason. Talmud says, again, just to do something weird, right? You don't take the food off the table before you've eaten it. That's another strange thing. Again, so the kids think something is weird and ask questions. In came lama katav rambam de karpas sarach kolech ve'echel lechol v'ilu atshochan. So, if that's the case, so why do we have to eat a certain amount of karpas? Just eating a bite of it will be weird enough. Why legislate how much of the karpas we have to eat just to do something weird to get the kids to ask questions? So then just, yeah, take a bite, or maybe some people eat and some people don't. The point is that it's going to look weird, so it'll look weird. That should be enough. Why be legislating amounts to eat? And the second question is, why are we dipping it in charoset, according to the Rambam? What do we dip it in, typically?
Salt.
The salt water, right? Salt water. So why is he saying to dip in charoset?
Well, salt water, I mean, obviously signifies the suffering, you know, the tears.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But he's saying charoset as opposed to salt water.
Yeah, he's saying charoset instead of salt water. So the commentaries who write in the Rambam, even they ask this question: why is he legislating how much karpas to eat? Just to get the kids to ask questions. So take a bite. Who cares how much you're eating? So when it comes to matzah, we say you should eat a kazayit because there's a mitzvah to eat matzah. So then, well, what's eating? How much is eating? So eating is an olive's worth. That's considered eating. So then you need measurements to make sure that you do the mitzvah, you know, so there's some sort of uniformity to it. But here, why are we doing this? He says, therefore, this commentary, Maimonides, one of the major commentaries in the Rambam, he says that you can even take a small bite of the karpas, it doesn't matter. And also, a lot of the other codes of Jewish law don't have any amount that you're supposed to be eating, amount of karpas you're supposed to be eating. Okay. And not only that, he says, but there's a big discussion as well as to what you should be dipping the karpas in, the charoset or the salt water. According to the Ashkenazi Middle Ages, how do you say that?
Middle Ages?
Medieval? Yeah. People in the Middle Ages, they're not middle-aged.
No.
Medieval?
Medieval was before Middle Ages. Yeah.
So how do you say one who lived in the Middle Ages?
One who lived in the Middle Ages.
You can't say a middle-aged person. A person from the Middle Ages.
Middle-aged person.
I'm saying, it doesn't sound right.
Not here anymore, I'm sure of that.
Who's not? The rabbi.
No, whoever lived there.
Anyone in the Middle Ages. As far as you know. Okay. So, the Ashkenazi rabbis from the Middle Ages. Okay. So, they say that we should dip the karpas in the salt water. And yet, the Rambam, who was Sephardi, so he didn't really care what the Ashkenazi were saying, so he said, Echaroset. So, he says, what's the logic of the Rambam? So, he says, V'nir the Rambam letame azom. So, the Rambam is consistent because the Rambam is sober, because the Rambam writes elsewhere in his book of Jewish law, not only does the Rambam say you have to dip the karpas in charoset, you have to dip the matzah in charoset. So when you make the bracha of al achil matzah, you eat matzah for the first time, you dip it in charoset. For the Rambam, you dip everything in charoset. It's just the charoset part.
I'm not sure if I understand. Rambam said that you dip karpas in the charoset?
Yes. And also the matzah you dip in charoset.
And then you dip the maror.
And that we do.
That would be dipping three times.
We dip like 1,000 times.
Is it a particular commandment or that?
No. It's
the custom.
It says the custom. It says understanding. Yeah.
Different.
Then you dip, right?
You could have different customs.
So what's his logic? Why is that his custom? So he says, "Viv Rambam tzrichim bi lama." So why does he dip everything charoset? So Birshid Rambam Mudain Tivol Zedin Bimatza Eldimdina Kharoset. Says this is his understanding of why we have Kharoset at the Seder. So then the Kharoset who the Sarch Lahat Bilbo at a mitzvah halala zechilatit. His understanding is that every single thing that we eat on the night of the Seder, the reason we have Kharoset is to dip everything in it. That's why we have Kharoset on the table. It's the dipper. The big dipper. Right? We're supposed to dip everything in it. Why do we dip everything in the charoset? Because we're supposed to remember the bricks that we had to make in Egypt. So we want to tie everything back to that suffering. So we're consistent. So we dip everything in it, and so we constantly remember it.
How do they do it before Rambam? How do they do it in biblical Israel?
Well, he didn't make up the idea of charoset. He just...
No.
Oh, I don't know. When he was a kid, what did they have at their table? I don't know. Maybe they're the same thing.
How do they do it in biblical Israel? Do they dip everything in charoset?
I don't know. I don't know how far back.
He wasn't there.
I don't know how far back the custom of charoset. That's an interesting question. How far back when's the first mention of charoset?
That would be Tom.
Talmud mentioned it? I think
no,
Talmud.
But that would be post-Talmud.
What would be?
Before Talmud, they didn't have seders, did they?
They did have seders, yeah. Well, you saw Jesus' seder.
The king,
that's
the first temple, what? The second temple, there's no mention of it?
It was just oral tradition, so we don't have writings from them as to what they did. Because the Talmud was not written until 500 CE, roughly. So we have their customs, which we assume was passed down. Let me see. I'm curious if we can find the earliest mention of charoset and how far back people think it goes.
Yeah,
I'm curious.
There's got to be something.
Oh, let me see for next week if I can provide some information on that. Okay. So his understanding is saying that we dip everything in charoset, and therefore he considers the karpas as one of the foods of the Seder. Typically, we would say the foods of the Seder are the matzah and the maror, and then in the times of the temple, the karban pesach, the Passover sacrifice. And the karpas are something fun. But he says that no, once we have a food at the Seder, it has to follow the rules of the rest of the foods of the Seder. And therefore, number one, we have to eat the proper amount. And number two, we dip it in karpas, because we dip everything in karpas. So, again, what he's trying to do here is take this concept of karpas, which is somewhat vague, and legislate it, and figure out how to categorize it. And once you categorize it, then the laws follow that categorization. So once it gets categorized under the laws of foods of the Seder, now it follows the rules of that, and that category means you eat it an olive's worth, and according to the Rambam, you dip it in charoset. All right, we'll stop here. Just a little taste. Excuse the pun. We dipped our toes. What?
Who legislated that it's got to be a